My name is Matthew Vonstein, and my wife and I call Grace Fellowship home, and I have the honor of speaking with you here this morning. I love to start these things off, joke a little, make people laugh, feel a little bit less insecure, start preaching. I just did it. Coming in this morning, I felt a lot of different things. My heart was really burdened and broken over some of the news that we've been hearing over the past 24 hours. And that kind of goes all over the place for me. We're a bag of mixed motives, right? Or mixed emotions, I should say. Just feeling brokenhearted where we see brokenness and evil and hate. And also feeling sometimes frustrated and angry or fearful. And I was just praying to God and just saying, God, in order for me to do what you would like to do through me and in us here this morning, what do I do with all of this? And I felt a pretty clear answer for him. He said, just pray. So can we just pray for a moment? God, we recognize your goodness, your majesty and power. We love you, God. God, I confess that I have been a bag of mixed emotions this morning as I just react to the brokenness in me and the brokenness in the world. God, I pray for this church as well as the churches just across this country, God, that as millions of Americans go to worship this morning, Lord, that you would meet us right where we are. God, when we feel doubt, God, would you just remind us of the truth that you have for us? God, when we feel sadness and grief, Lord, would you pick us up out of despair and remind us of your love and give us peace? God, when we feel anger, God, would you calm our spirits and our hearts and remind us that you're in control? God, we ask your hand over those who this morning are suffering in ways I don't understand, but you do. God, we love you. We thank you. You are good and wonderful to us. We pray that you would be with us this morning. Would your Holy Spirit be at work in our hearts? And would you mold us more and more like you? In Jesus' name, amen. I was going to show a clip of The Lord of the Rings to you this morning. I didn't for the first service, so don't worry either. I wanted to save a little bit of time, but more importantly, as I told people that, oh, I'm going to play this clip from Lord of the Rings, I would say 8 out of the 10 people that I said, oh, I'm going to show this clip, they said to me, I haven't seen Lord of the Rings. And I felt attacked. I said, what? You know, I actually, a friend, I said, has your family seen Lord of the Rings? And she said, no, my family's not into that geek stuff. And I'm like, hold on! What is that? What does that mean? I'm not showing the Lord of the Rings clip today. But hey, listen, when I was young and I was finally done reading all 40 books of the Hardy Boys, what?
No.
Fantastic, you know, narrative. All right. So when I was done reading whatever that was, I wanted to read something less dumb. And I picked up, I was young, and I picked up Lord of the Rings. And oh my gosh, it was awesome. I loved it so much. And Hardy Boys was, you know, some guys solving some weird crimes. But man, Lord of the Rings, oh, it was this whole new world, right? It was this fantasy and adventure and good and evil. And you know, I read it a couple times going through it. I loved it. And of course, the author who wrote the Lord of the Rings, if you haven't read the books or seen the movies, I encourage you to do both. You can skip the Hobbit movies. I wasn't impressed with those. Sorry. Oh, what? Hey! Now we're fighting. It's a fight. So when I was reading the author, when he wrote that, literally audible when I said that. The author's intent when he wrote those books, of course, at its core, one of the things that sort of drove the narrative, right, of The Lord of the Rings was friendship, which kind of makes it unique, especially, you know, in the sense that there's not a lot that have been as successful as The Lord of the Rings in the sense of how it just brought so many people into it. And at its core was this friendship. And I was going to show you a clip of Frodo, Baggins, and Samwise, Ganji, you know, and they're in this boat. And Frodo tries to go on without his friend, and his friend just nearly drowns trying to get back to him. And they have this moment, the music is sweeping, right? And they're crying and hugging, and they're being friends. And it shows this devotion to one another that is really, really neat. In fact, we don't really see that kind of genuine friendship displayed a ton on the screen, and so when the music is sweeping and they're crying and they're hugging, sometimes we can even just make fun of it, you know what I mean? Or we just kind of giggle at it because it makes us a little uncomfortable, you know? And it's not just Sam and Frodo, right? They journey together, they sacrifice for each other, they get mad at each other, they fight with each other, they forgive each other, and they just go on this incredible journey that they sort of don't deserve to be on together. But not just them. There's two other characters, too, that stood out to me when I was young was Legolas and Gimli, right? Legolas was this elf and Gimli was this dwarf. And in the beginning of the book, I mean, they are essentially bigoted and racist towards one another. They hate each other. And as they go on this incredible quest of, of great importance, you know, by the end, you know, they have this incredible bond with each other as they journeyed together. And so that always left an impact on me about friendship and wanting to go on those kind of adventures, you know, with friends. 6 years ago, I had listened to a sermon on friendship, and it had tremendous impact on me. Some of those things, I'm going to borrow the wisdom of others and share with you. Actually, that sermon would also lead me, and I'm telling you this so that you could read this too, I would read C.S. Lewis's Four Loves. It's a book of four different essays written on the kinds of love that God has designed for us. So the one essay is on romantic love. The one is on family love. The other one is the love of God for us. And fourth, and the one that drew so much of my attention, was the love of a friend, being unique and kind of distinct from all of those other things. And I would take that, as well as recently something that I didn't expect that kind of spoke into friendship in a really, really cool way, was Tim Keller's devotional on Proverbs, which he leaves pages for friendship. That was just really, really neat. But I would create a lesson for the Young Life students and leaders on friendship. And no other lesson have I ever given in Young Life that they ate it up as much as that one. And they would ask me, leaders too, like, will you do that lesson on friendship again? Or can we have that discussion on friendship again? Over and over and over again. So once or twice a year, I would lead and facilitate this discussion on friendship. And why, right? Because the truth is, for them, my Young Life leaders and students and all that kind of interact with our ministry as well as you, it's applicable to all of us in some way, shape, or form, meaning we have friends and we can evaluate the ones we have, or we are a friend and we can think about the way we are a friend, better or worse, or we don't have them and we sort of long for them. Because I think that's the truth. The truth is, I think all of us, at our core, I know that we can build up some walls and calluses around our heart. The truth is, I think that we long for genuine friendship, for more of it. I think some of us are not sure if we have it at all. As I even begin to talk now, what you're doing is you're beginning to go through your Rolodex of people you know, right? Who's my friend? I was talking to my father about this message, and I was asking for some of his wisdom, and he said, you know, Maddie, as he calls me, or Chewy is another name he gives me. He said, right now in my season of life, I don't know if I have friends. And this is what we do, right? We begin to think about it. Some of us don't know if we deserve it or where to get it. Some of us have been hurt tremendously by it. And we don't know how to build them and grow them. This morning, I want to spend some time in the book of Proverbs, and we're going to barely scratch the surface on the wisdom that Proverbs has on friendship. I mean, we could spend all morning just reading the verses on friendship. There's so much there. But what I want to point us to is the uniqueness of friendship. I want to talk about the discovery of it, how we discover these friendships. I want to talk about the building blocks of friendship and the power of friendship. So if you would pull out the insert that you have there, believe it or not, it has a little Chick-fil-A coupon on the back that you can use for a free sandwich. You're just like, mine doesn't. Mine doesn't. No, I was just kidding. I'm sorry. You should never lie to a Christian about Chick-fil-A, right? I'm sorry. I just wanted you to pull it out. I'm sorry. I wanted you to get it. It was only good for today anyway, so it wouldn't, all right, it's fine. Boom, that was a good one, all right. So here it is. Listen, the reason I have this is because I'm gonna read through these, and I love this for you to have this, because I'm gonna come back to these different verses throughout this morning, and we'll put them on the screen as I read. So I'm gonna read to you, follow along as I go through some of these verses with you guys. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You guys are going to really like this next one. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house. Too much of you, and they will hate you. Someone just said, preach. Like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on a wound, is the one who sings songs to a heavy heart. Like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is the one who deceives their neighbor and says, I was only joking. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of a friend springs from their heartfelt advice. If anyone loudly blesses their neighbor, those of you who hate waking up early in the morning, right? Anyone who loudly blesses their neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Amen. As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Whoever rebukes a person will in the end gain favor rather than one who has a flattering tongue. Those who flatter their neighbors are spreading nets to their feet. Let's thank God for his word. God, thank you for your word. God, we thank you just for how living and active your wisdom and love to us is in these things. So God, I just pray that this morning as we unfold your wisdom, God, I just pray that you would speak to our hearts where we are, Lord, and that we would learn more about you, more about ourselves. We love you in Jesus' name, amen. So keep that handy with you. One of the first things I want to talk about quickly is just the uniqueness of friendship. I probably don't have to convince you that real, authentic friendship is unique. And here's the thing. Throughout my message this morning, I'm not going to broaden, I'm going to narrow our view of friendship, okay? Not to disqualify, discredit, or devalue any of the other relationships we have in our life, but so that we can get closer to the sort of authenticity and depth of relationship that the verses here in Proverbs are trying to speak to us. Does that make sense? And so friendship is so incredibly unique, no matter where you're from or where you are, right? All different cultures are different and sort of uphold and lift up different kinds of relationships. And so if you live in a country where it's all about common cause, right? Your neighbor is the most significant relationship you have. It's all about civic duty, our advancement together as a people. If we live in a different country or society, that might uphold family, which exists today, right? Matriarchal and patriarchal families are the primary relationship that we find value in, who you are, who you're related to, the name you have, right? And in our society, we're an individualistic society. That's the most important thing, is the individual, right? Sort of in our culture. But then what is the most upheld relationship in our culture? Think about the music we listen to. Think of the movies that we watch, or the magazines at the grocery store, right? It's romance. It's one of the most important relationships sort of to us culturally. You know, when you go to the grocery store, you don't see a magazine that says, like, you know, buy this magazine to find out who Brad Pitt is saying he's friends with now, right? Like, no one cares. You know, that's not why you buy that magazine, and that's not what it's telling you Brad Pitt is doing, right? And you've bought that magazine once before. I know you have, all right? It's fine. So friendship, kind of no matter where you are, friendship always sort of takes the back seat, right? It's never where the spotlight is. And look, even when we're talking about some of these different relationships, think about them. I mean, they're sort of forced upon us. Like, we can't choose our family, right? Some of you are like, I wish I could choose my family. We can't. You have the family you have, right? And we get that, right? Good or bad, by the way. We have family relationship and love, and we understand what it's supposed to look like or doesn't look like, all of those sorts of things. And look, Proverbs here, this first one, 17:17. Says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. It's saying, look, the thing that we're talking about is distinct and different from even the depth of a brother that'll be there for you in tough times. A friend is deeper than that. A friend is distinct from that. Look, your brother will be there for you, but he might not like you, right? He's family. He'll show up. He'll grumble about you the whole time. Here we are again, you know, family. But a friend is different. Romance. Romance is everywhere, and we get it. Whether or not we're married or single or otherwise, we get romance. We understand what it does to us in some sense, right? It takes over. It's all compassion and obsession and all of that. Like, we understand, we get it. But what is different about friendship is that it's completely voluntary. You choose it. I'm going to read a number of quotes from C.S. Lewis's essay here, and here's one that kind of helps us head this direction. Friendship is, in a sense, the least natural of loves, the least instinctive, organic, biological, gregarious, and necessary. It has the least commerce with our nerves. There's nothing throaty about it, nothing that quickens the pulse or turns you pale and red. And C.S. Lewis isn't even discrediting it, saying it is lesser value because of that. He's just saying this is unique. This is different. It doesn't force itself upon you. Not at all. And look, when it comes to our survival, if you were just to look at it that way, like as a species, right? We need family love, right? We have to have that, right? We rear our families and our children, and romantic love is what kind of keeps the children coming anyway, right? So we get that, right? So friendship is completely unnecessary, right? It is the most unnecessary of loves when you think about it sort of at that like survival level. And so that's why so many of us, either our lives or long seasons of our lives, can go about our lives with our obsessions over any number of things, not just relationships, but money or advancement or success or family or romance, and not really ever experience authentic friendship. Proverbs says that we can perish for a lack of friends. It also says, by the way, that we can perish for poorly chosen friends. That's a whole different sermon, okay? The idea of how our friends influence us. I've said to Young Life students and leaders all the time, show me your friends, it's a forecast of your future. Because, again, in this sort of individualistic society where I am me, nobody influences me. I see the world the way I want to see the world. Who influences us more than anyone first? It's our families, right? Absolutely. You cannot escape that. No matter how much you think you can, you can't. And then who influences us more than anyone after our families is our friends. Absolutely. And look, The Proverbs here is there's so much. In fact, I remember Pastor Jeff giving a message on the difference between the wise and the foolish and what it's like to interact with the wise and foolish and to be the wise and the foolish, right? Now, look, is Proverbs saying to some of you maybe this morning or to any of us that we need to get new friends? No. Yes, absolutely. Like, yes. You know, that could be like one great application for you. It's like, I'm friends with fools, right? Oh, is that rough? I'm sure all your friends are great. They're all perfectly great influences on you. But listen, that's a whole different message, right? It's not just unique. It's also rare. Proverbs 18:24. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. But listen, look what it says. But there is how many? A friend who sticks closer than a brother. The kind of friendship that we're unpacking here this morning, saying, man, if I live a life where I get to experience this once, twice, three times, God, what a blessing that I got to experience the kind of genuineness and of friendship that we're talking about here. It's not easy to find. And look, I remember when I was a kid, I would come home and, you know, guess what, guys? I'm kind of a social butterfly. And so I would come home from school all the time and I'd be like, Ma! And she'd be like, what? I'm like, I got a new best friend. I have a new best friend, you know? And this is like the thousandth time she'd heard that this week, you know? And my mom had a pretty good biblical view of friendship, you know? And she's like, well, Maddie, might not be your best friend, you know, what's his name? I'm like, I don't know his name, okay? We were playing Foursquare, and we high-fived, and it was a great high-five, and we're best friends, you know? And then I look out the window, there's a kid riding his bike. I'm like, I love bikes. That kid's my best friend, you know? My view as a kid, which was perfectly natural, was like, oh, everybody's my friend. Everybody's my best friend, right? You know, and my mom had probably a healthier, more centered view of like, oh, man, this is not what you think it is. No, she wasn't like sitting me down, now listen, they're not your friend, right? Okay, I'm just seeing this years later, right? You know, my mom understood how unique and rare and incredible genuine friendship can be. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of a friend springs from their heartfelt advice. The word pleasantness there means sweetness. Think of the author writing that when he's talking about a friend. He's saying the sweetness of a friend. When he wrote that, okay, sweet food, right? It's not as ubiquitous then as it was for us now, right? Like, it's everywhere. Like, for us now, we're just like, is there something that doesn't have sugar in it, right? But as he wrote that, he's saying, look, a friend is like that rare, unbelievably sweet morsel of food, like honey, you know? That's what he's describing as a friend. A friend is unique. I also want to talk about this morning that friends, we need to discover them, right? And that's a little bit of the narrowing I'm talking about. I'm trying to give things some definition in terms that are helpful to us, meaning that we may use the terminology of friends for all sorts of people that are really just our colleagues or our companions or our playmates in life, right? Because as we work together or we play together or we even serve together, all sorts of things, there's people all around us and they're wonderful relationships, right? And we're so thankful for the people around us. But what we're kind of being led towards is that it is within those people where we really discover friends. C.S. Lewis says this. He says, for us, of course, the shared activity and therefore the companionship on which friendship supervenes, it may be common religion, common studies, a common profession, even a common recreation. All who share it will be our companions. But one or two or three who share something more will be our friends. Facebook has done us an incredible disservice, hasn't it? I have a new friend today. No, you don't. No, you don't. You have somebody else to manage your online perception with, okay? Have fun with that. I'll say that your kid's cute, even if I don't think he is. And you'll say my kid's cute. We can do this whole thing back and forth, right? I have a friend. I have 200 friends. I don't even know who they are. We discover friends as we journey, not in front of our screens, not on our phones, as we work, as we play, as we serve, as we worship. We have these people around us that we call companions, and in them we may discover a friend. And this is why, for those of us who long friendship or have been around someone who really deeply longs friendship, I've been this person before, maybe you've been this person, right? But we don't just go around saying, you, we're best friends now, I need you to be my friend. I'm needy, and I need to consume you as a friend. Be there for me. I need you. Friend, be my friend. Be my friend. What do all of us do? And they're like, uh-huh. You know? No, thanks. And this is the kind of harsh words that C.S. Lewis says about that. Are you ready? He's about to call me and you pathetic, okay? That is why that those pathetic people who simply want friends can never make any. The very condition of having friends is that we should want something else besides friends. Where the truthful answer to the question, do you see the same truth, would be, I see nothing and I don't care about truth. I only want a friend. No friendship can arise, though affection might. There would be nothing for the friendship to be about. And friendship must be about something, even if it were only the enthusiasm for dominoes or white mice or how incredible the Lord of the Rings is. I added that. Those who have nothing, listen, those who have nothing can share nothing. Those who are going nowhere can have no fellow travelers. Look, we discover friends because we see the same thing. We see the same truth. It can be anything, as superficial or as deep as you want, but that's where we discover them. I remember when we had our very first Young Life banquet, and I met the one and only Alex Gilbert, okay? And I walked towards him slowly as not to intimidate him with my stature, and he allowed me to approach. And I remember that, of course, I discovered in Alex was that we had a common love. We had a common vision together. We both believed that young people in this community deserve to know about Jesus and that we should go at any ends and lengths so that they can know him and follow him. And so, of course, that common bond with Alex and the fact that we just had good chemistry, we're both huge, strong guys, and why do you keep laughing at that? But because we saw the same thing, man, we just enjoyed doing this kind of stuff together. And so, of course, Alex started coming and teaching at Young Life, and I loved it. And I would speak at Grace Student Ministries, and we would be like, hey, man, let's throw these events together, and it'll bless our ministries. Like, yeah, it'll bless our ministries. We just wanted to hang out, you know? And we would do, like, you know, we would just do all of this stuff together. But we still had that common vision, right? We had something together. And at that point, like, are we best friends? I don't know. That we were companions in ministry together, right? And we had good chemistry, and that's great. And as Grace Student Ministries grew and as Young Life grew, the practicality of us doing all of this stuff together became just kind of less and less. It didn't make as much sense. And then all of a sudden, like, the litmus test is in, right? We're not useful to each other anymore. And sometimes we get kind of defensive on that language of like, hey, I don't like people because they're useful to me. Yeah, you do, right? Absolutely. And so all of a sudden, Alex and I are doing less and less together. But to my complete joy, Alex and I wanted to keep hanging out with each other. And we could hang out and we didn't have to talk about youth ministry. Sometimes we wouldn't talk about our families either. We would just hang out and whatever was on our minds or whatever, but we would begin to kind of journey together. And I realized I had discovered a friend. Aw. He's sitting right here and, you know, I paid him $10. I'm like, please don't say anything against this later. Say that you're my friend. Friendship is unique, it's rare, and it has to be discovered. But it can't just be discovered, right? Alex became friends, and it just works from there, right? You don't have to put anything into it. All your friendships just work, right? No, of course not. Like, we've got to build on them. We've got to grow them. And so what I want to look at is some of these verses here in Proverbs as they help define and characterize what might be this godly, authentic, deep friendship that we long for or want to be for others. And the first is this, and we all understand this, is that friends are faithful. We get that, right? Now, I know you would laugh at that verse. What was the one that said, seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, but too much of you and they will hate you, right? Look, we get it when all of us have had a friend, or maybe this has been us, right? Where we fall in love, we're dating someone, and then your friend just like falls off the face of the earth, right? Nothing else matters to them anymore. They're not eating, they're not sleeping. It's just all this, you know, this one person, you know? But you know, we can do that with friendship too. And it's any time where any good thing becomes an ultimate thing to us, right? And a friendship can take an inappropriate place in our heart where God is meant to be something to us that a friendship cannot ever be. And so what this verse is saying is that it's not that when we have authentic, deep friendships that the test for how good that friendship is whether or not you spend every waking moment together, right? And we've done this before because they meet so many of our emotional or mental, spiritual needs that it's like it's just this one person. What this verse is saying is that we are faithful to each other, not at just at all times, but at all kinds of times. Right? A friend is faithful to you as your life changes. A friend is faithful to you when stuff hits the fan, right? A friend is faithful to you when your family changes, when things are hard, when things are good. Friendship isn't defined by our spending 24/7 together. It's defined by being willing to be there for each other at all kinds of times. Through change, through hardship, through joy. And that's where we get this, you know, this idea. The other proverb says that bad friends will let you go to ruin. But that one friend won't, right? A good friend will not let you go to ruin. That's where we get the terminology from, a fair weather friend, right? Yeah. I've been a fair weather friend. We've had fair weather friends, haven't we? Where we thought there was more to this friendship, and then the chips are down, and it's like, where are you? It's because we desire for our friendships to have faithfulness and constancy to them. And something I am guilty of, I'm only going to call me out. If you want to join me on this, fine. But man, one of the things I do all the time is, man, I try to get out of the faithfulness requirement of friendship with my phone all the time. And I catch myself doing it, and I hate it. This man, I discover something about a friend or something that's going on in their lives or a need that they have or a need that they've told me, and I type the worst text in the whole world. I say, oh man, I'm so sorry. Let me know if you need anything. What does any red-blooded, Western, individualistic person say after that? I'm fine, thank you. I'm okay, thanks so much. Right? You know what a friend does? A friend just goes. At any cost to themselves, they just go. The truth is, I send that message not because I'm inquiring whether or not there's something I can do. I'm sending that message because I know what the answer is going to be, and it gets me out of it. Oh, man. My brother, Stefan, who I would say that over the past 10 years, we have developed a friendship with one another. Those of you who have siblings know that that is not a given, okay? He's become my friend and me to him. And one of the things that my brother Stefan resembles to me more than almost anyone in my life is that in all of the relationships that he has with his wife, with his mother and father, with his brothers like me and his friends, is that my brother Stefan, he just goes. He just goes. If any of those people in his life, and it's clear to him that they're in need, or he just needs to be there, whether or not he has something to do or not, he just shows up. And I've never not been thankful for that. Oh, I really hate how you're imposing on me right now. No, because he's not just a brother, he's my friend. And I love that he's there, and I'm so thankful that he showed up. A friend is faithful. A friend is also careful. Like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on a wound is the one who sings songs to a heavy heart. Or the other one that you really liked. If you're going to tell me something good in the morning, it's going to be taken as a curse, okay? Listen, it's great. I love the levity even in that verse because we get it though, right? Look, a friend gets us and is careful enough with us to know when to speak into our lives. To know how to do it. To know why to do it or when to do it. They're sensitive to us about how we're wired to love us in a way where we hear them and they're careful. You know, it's kind of like that verse. Like, if I have some things I want to talk to my wife about, I'm going to let her get a cup of coffee first. I'm careful. That's self-preservation, you know? Okay? But listen, but let's not mistake that for like this. We're going to talk in a second about honesty, right? And I'm not talking about a kind of political correctness with our friends, or we're walking on eggshells in a way where we're not willing to say the things that need to be said. I'm talking about a kind of carefulness where you love someone enough to let that inform the way you talk to them, to inform the way you love them. I mean, I admit sometimes I'm like, man, my friends are the people who I can just be me around, right? But the truth is, do you know what friends are? Friends are not people who just like are just of themselves around each other. Friends are people who are sensitive to each other and want to love each other, not in a way of nervousness, but just of care with each other. I mean, we get this with family, this sort of sensitivity that I'm talking about. This idea that we get that with like a romantic partner, a husband or a wife, right? Your husband or wife walks in the room and like their eye twitches slightly. You're like, what's wrong? Right? You're just so wired with them, right? You get it. And then in family, like if you have kids, and I have very small, I have three little boys. I'm thankful that they have really never, they think so, but they've really never grieved in any kind of way, shape, or form. But I've heard so many times the quote, right? Like, you can't be any happier than your least happy child, right? As they actually really begin to experience life in a way that creates pain and hurt. Like, man, a mom and a dad's connection to their children is so deep, and it's involuntary in so many ways. But a friend's willingness to be sensitive and careful is saying, I'm volunteering into your world, into your pain. If you hurt, I can't sing songs to you. I can't dance around and act like everything's okay if you're not okay. Like, you not being okay matters to me. And I'll be there for you at any cost. Friends are faithful. Friends are careful. And thirdly, friends are honest with each other. Here you go. Friends are honest. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. A friend is willing to be honest. A friend is willing to wound a friend in love. And so many of the times, we are not willing to be honest with our friends, not because we're worried about their reaction, but because I'm not willing to go through this thing of honesty with you. It's going to cost me too much to be honest. I got to deal with your defensiveness. I've got to stick around long enough to listen, right? But friends are honest with each other. And Proverbs here in a number of verses, and the other verse says, look, if all you do is flatter people, you know what you're doing? You're actually you're spreading a net underneath their feet, which literally means like you're a Judas to them. You're betraying them as friends. We live in a society of constant flattery, don't we? And if what we want from our friends is only to retweet, to only like, to love, and to pat us on the back, to tell us we're beautiful, to tell us the decisions we're making are awesome, right? And if all that is what we want from people, we don't want friends, we just want fans. Friends are willing to be honest with one another. And are they careful in that honesty? Yes. But they're willing to wound one another in love. Fourthly, friends give counsel. How many of you have ever looked back at a decision and said, that was dumb, a decision that you made? Look back and go, that was dumb. I look at, you know, me and one other guy. So listen, friends, okay, friends are meant to reduce, all right, as much as possible in counsel, the amount of dumb decisions that we didn't have to make. But again, because of the kind of culture we live in, we push people back who try to counsel us. Again, especially those friends. I understand that unsolicited advice is the worst kind, right? Okay, but I'm saying from a friend, somebody who's earned it, who is giving you counsel and wisdom about what you're doing and where you're going, we push it away all the time because we have this sort of independent attitude of like, no, I just need to experience this. I need to learn myself. I know you're saying look left and right before I cross the highway, but I'm going to be honest with you, man. I feel like I need to get hit by a car to really get that, you know? Like, I'm on my own journey right now, you know? That's funny, but I mean, don't we feel that way about our friends sometimes? Like, what are you doing? Like, oh, good, I'm so glad you're dating her again the third time. Not enough destruction after the first two. It's awesome. Like, oh, a $3,000 a month lease on a car, wise. Yes, that's smart. No, we gotta give each other good counsel. And this is different than just like a mentoring relationship. Those are beautiful, and I've had many. Or a counselor or a therapist in our life. They're so beautiful that so many of us should have an experience. But I'm talking about, did you hear the verse? An iron sharpens iron, right? It's this. It goes back and forth that we counsel each other. We give each other wisdom. We love each other in that way, and we're willing to speak truth. I mean, let me ask you now, for those of you who do have the blessing of saying you have some of these genuine friendships, do you bring the important decisions of your life to them? I hope you do. Do you ask? Man, I need you to speak into this. Before I do anything, I just need to hear your wisdom. Pastor Jeff talks about it all the time. We take God's Spirit, God's Word, and God's people in our lives to try to inform the way that we go. Do you bring those things to your friends and give one another counsel? And I would just say this one thing for those of us that are a little bit more stubborn and tend to push people away, is I promise you, there is someone willing to be your friend who will coach you and encourage you through every dumb decision you want to make. Meaning, as the people who really love us speak wise counsel into our lives and we don't like it, and we begin to push it away, we just go, I'll just find new friends. And you will. You will. They're out there. Don't push away those who are giving you wise counsel and love the most important thing in you, which is the Lord. Friends are faithful. Friends are careful. Friends are honest. Friends give wise counsel to one another. Iron sharpening iron. Oh, so we're done then, right? Friendship. Proverbs, thank you. I don't know. There's two problems. One, I've given you no practical advice whatsoever on where this kind of friendship takes place, right? Some of us experience it. Some of us don't. I kind of Dr. Field you with some good ideas for how to make a good friendship. Go in peace. You know what the truth is, though? I think we react to this in three different ways. One, some of us, right now, you are desperately longing for this kind of friendship. Deeply. And you don't have it. And the truth is, many of us don't have it. The truth is, I mean, we even just live in a society where our friends are just constantly ripped away from us. They move, they're taken away. I mean, second, some of us feel guilty because we go, I've been a poor friend. And no message up here should ever say, hey, may the guilt be with you. Right? Yeah. Go, take that, see how long it takes. Fix something. But we do. Some of us feel guilty. We've been poor friends to others. Third, some of us have just been desperately hurt by friends. And you just push people away. I can't do this friend thing anymore. I'm just going to get hurt. So where do we find the power to have and be and build the kind of friendships that we really need in a way that doesn't make us long or feel guilty in a way that's unhealthy or make us hurt and just go, great, thanks, Matt. Just imagine the disciples and as they traveled with Jesus, all the things they got to see. Are you guys sometimes a little envious? I mean, they got to see Jesus do some of the most incredible things, right? He touches this man with leprosy and skin is clean. He walks up to someone who is hurting and desperate and broken in their bodies and he just heals them. He goes up to a crowd that's hungry and he takes all this food and he just multiplies it and feeds 5,000 men and their families. Like, they got to see all this. He spoke love and authority and power in all of these ways. It was incredible. Jesus is awesome. Yes. And you know, you imagine even just the companionship. Notice I didn't say friendship right away. I wasn't there. I don't know how much these disciples were friends, right? But they were companions. And maybe, hopefully, there were some deep friendships that were built between them, right? But they all saw the same thing, right? Who did they see? They saw him. And it brought these people together that were so different from one another. Fishermen and tax collectors and doctors. Oh, it's just awesome. And one of the times that Jesus was done teaching, he says to all of these disciples, he goes, listen, get in this boat and go out and I'll meet you on the other side. And so they say, okay, got it. Sounds good. And so the disciples go out in this boat, and what happens is this, it says in scripture that this massive storm comes upon them. And a bunch of fishermen, people who are used to being at sea, are scared for their lives, right? They think they're going to die. It's not funny. Like, they're thinking about the last time they spoke to their loved ones, their wives, their children, the last time they got to be with Jesus, because the water and the wind and the waves are coming upon their boat in a way in which they're going, this is it. Like, this is the end. And you know what? So many of them were probably thinking right in that moment, like, man, if we needed Jesus with us at any point, it'd be right now. It'd be right now. Why didn't he just come with us? You know what I mean? Why did he send us across this Sea of Galilee on our own? There's no way he can get to us now. But Jesus is awesome. And Jesus sees them out there, right? Who does he see? His friends. And he takes out his cell phone and he texts them and he says, do you need anything? Are you good? Let me know if you need anything. Peter's like, I'm fine. No, you know why he doesn't do that? Because he's a friend. And he's saying, that water can't stop me from getting to you. I'm unintimidated by it. I don't care if it gets me wet. I don't care if it knocks me over. I don't care if it blows in my face. I mean, how weird would that have been to be on the water in the middle of a storm? Jesus doesn't care. I'm going to go. Because you know what? The chips are down right now. And what is a friend? He's faithful. And I'm going to go. And Jesus would walk out onto the water and go out to them. And in the middle of their fear, in the middle of their mess, Jesus was careful with them. Do you know what he says? He goes, hey, guys, it's me. He goes, don't be afraid. And he's honest with them. And he shows him his power and his love. He calms the storm. He pulls Peter out of the water. He kind of rebukes Peter a little bit. You feel that wound from a friend. He goes, oh, you of little faith. You know? He's not saying that because he's being mean to Peter. He's saying that because he loves Peter. He's okay to wound him a little bit. And he gets back in the boat with these guys, and they just journey with Jesus and do life and counsel and care and faithfulness to one another. He was a friend. And in the Garden of Gethsemane, did I say that right? In John 15, 15, right before the cross, Jesus would look at the disciples and he would say to them, he would say, I no longer call you slaves, but friends. And he wouldn't just open himself up and be vulnerable and transparent because of a storm. No, Jesus would go all the way up onto the cross to deal with not just his friends, the disciples, but me and you, and say, I'm going to take out the only storm that can actually harm my friends, their sin. We want a friend to be faithful? Look at Jesus on the cross. You want a friend to always be there? Look at Jesus' arms open wide. You want a friend who is willing to not count the cost of what it's going to take to show up for you. Look at his arms outstretched on the cross. He endured pain and suffering and torture and mockery and the weight of the world's sins upon him. Jesus would give up his friendship with the Father. Something that he had known for all of eternity, so that we could be friends with God. You see, Jesus Christ is the friend of sinners. Jesus Christ is the friend, listen, to you, the lonely. He's a friend to the reject. He's a friend to the outcast. He's a friend to those who feel like I don't belong. Should I even be here? He's a friend to the angry. He's a friend to the doubting. To anyone who would receive his free gift of grace, Jesus Christ is the friend that always lets us in, never lets us down, the friend we really desire, the friend our heart really, really needs. He makes us whole. And then from there, what, we don't need friends now? No. No, now because of Jesus Christ in my life, because of the wholeness and the healing that he's doing in my life, now I can be the kind of friend that I need to be to others. How? Because now I can pursue others and not be afraid of rejection because I have God who'll never reject me. I can pursue friends and not worry about being let down. They will let me down, but God will never let me down. And more importantly than discovering the kind of friendship that my heart desires, I get to be the kind of friend that Jesus has been to me. Oh, man, and if I get to experience that too from someone to me, what a blessing. Unbelievable. And how do we find it? Where do we find it? Look, if you're new here to Grace Fellowship, or I guess if you've been coming here for its entire life, listen, this is so important. The gospel does what it does, and it just flips the whole world upside down, and the gospel does what only the gospel can do, which it pulls a group of people together that have no right to be sitting next to each other. See, we don't need to have a shared sport. We can. We don't need to have any other shared interest, because you know what we have together as a common bond? Our love of Jesus Christ. And do you know what that does? It bonds people together as companions. Rich and poor, black and white, left and right, broken and hurting, healthy and strong, loud, quiet, introverted, extroverted. It doesn't matter. We discover companions and even perhaps deep friendship right here in this room. Well, how do we do it? Well, when the service is over this morning, don't run for your car right away. Sign up to serve here at Grace. Sign up for Adopt-A-Blog. Go serve with someone. You might discover a friend. Go eat together. Sign up for one of the many beautiful house churches here at Grace Fellowship. Why? Because you need something else in your schedule? No. But because we need one another in order to foster and grow and understand and develop these kind of friendships. Because what happens? As I discover these kind of companions and hopefully even these deeper friendships, all of a sudden they become to me the hands and feet and love and grace of God in my life. When I say to God, I just need you to show up, I have a friend who will hug me. God, I need your wisdom. I have a friend who will speak into my life. Pray together, eat together, serve together, get dirty together, go love the lost together. And you may discover a friend. Make Jesus Christ the friend your heart desires, and we will find all the friends our heart needs. Let's worship together.